how tied to their coaches are the fortunes of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma would, if both of these guys left and brought in somebody who didn't do as good, Oklahoma would have more to lose because of the stature of the program. But if Oklahoma State dipped below a level of, yeah, being recognizable on the national scene, would that be a bigger detriment than it would be for OU, you know, winning 8 or 9 games a season? It was just interesting to me based on expectations. I think there would be more despair in the OU fan base, even though they were only losing a handful of games, although I think it might be more financially devastating to Oklahoma State if they fell behind beneath bowl level. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that either of those things would happen. The OU machine would keep on rolling, and both of these ADs are going to make perfect hires, and they're just kind of going to kind of keep what they're doing here. But if each of those guys left and there was a little bit of a downswing for several seasons, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's interesting. When I first heard you bring this up, here's the way that I was thinking about the question. This may not be the road you wanted to travel, but obviously both programs in different spots, different situations.
Yeah.
As far as how tied to the current coach that they are in terms of their success, I think it's vitally important. My first question to you is, tell me who they're going to hire. If Riley was to move on or if Gundy was to move on. I would say this. First, about OU. I think it's very important. Going over to the SEC, my opinion is that if OU is OU, if Oklahoma is operating the way that they should operate, meaning they're recruiting at the level they should recruit at, they're putting guys in the NFL at the rate that they should, and they have the right coach, I think OU can go over there and do just fine in the SEC. No, they're not going to win 6 conferences in a row. That's unrealistic over there. But I do think it takes the right coach, and all you have to do is look at some SEC programs over there. You know, it's easy to forget what Alabama was like before Nick Saban. Now, right. Alabama's still one of the historically great programs, but look at what they were doing when they may have taken a wrong turn in who they hired as their coach. You know, Tennessee has been struggling for years now. Nothing against Josh Heupel. It's his first year there. But, you know, they've taken some wrong turns with head coaches, and it hasn't worked out. Same goes for Florida, LSU, you know, go down the list. Any program over there, okay? And I think that 9-3 in the Big 12 can turn into 7-5 real quick over there. And so I think it's very important that you hire the right coach. You know, when you brought this up, Gideon, I remember I've had a lot of conversations with Eschbach about this over the years. And Al's even talked about this on the air. It's not like him and I share secrets. I have heard Al talk about this. And before I say this, I want to preface this by saying, I'm not here at all to disparage Gary Gibbs, because I think Gary Gibbs was an excellent football coach. I think Gary was in as tough of a situation at OU as you can possibly be in, with the probation and trying to follow Switzer. Okay, that is not easy, even at a place like OU. So this is nothing against Gary Gibbs at all. I do think that in the late 80s and the early 90s, in having conversations with Al and others who follow that program really closely, I think that at that point, there was kind of a sense of arrogance about some people down at OU. I know some people are chuckling, saying there still is. I think that there was a sense of, we're OU, we're always going to be at the top, we're always going to be contending for national championships. And as we quickly saw in the 90s, that's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Even at a place like OU, one of the top 5, 6, 7 programs, maybe better than that historically in college football. So I do think it's very important they hire the right guy. With Oklahoma State, obviously it's very important up there as well. Coach Gundy is the most successful head coach by leaps and bounds up there, and he's only going to, push those records even farther the longer that he stays. You know, I've talked with Jim about this, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I disagree a little bit, slightly, and I want to phrase this the right way. At a place like Oklahoma State, off the beaten path, for those of us that grew up around here, Gideon, we enjoy Stillwater, and there's a charm to it, but let's face it, Stillwater is not Beverly Hills at UCLA, or it's not Austin, Texas. I mean, let's be honest about it, okay? I think at OSU, I don't know that you have to have an OSU guy, but I do think you need somebody that understands what you have to do at OSU. In other words, I don't think you have to have somebody that their diploma says Oklahoma State University, but I do think you need to hire somebody who understands the challenges and what you're dealing with at Oklahoma State, off the beaten path. And again, I'm trying not to be too critical, but I'm just got to be honest. I mean, Stillwater is not it's not a vacation destination. Okay, I mean, I think we can all agree with that. So I both places for different reasons. I think it's very important. I think it's absolutely tied to your. I think any place in the country. Again, you can go down the list of the absolute premier programs: Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan. You know, USC. Nobody, look at what's going on in Florida State right now. Nobody is immune to down years if you take a wrong turn with the head coach. And that doesn't even necessarily mean hiring somebody that's, you know, incompetent or whatever. You can hire a good coach, may not be the right fit. It may not be somebody who understands what you have to do to win at that place. So I think anywhere, whether you're one of the elites or whether you're at a program that is on solid footing, whatever the case may be, I think it's directly tied to who you hire as your head coach. So I would just say, again, I'm not the wisest old man that you're ever going to meet, but I do think that anybody who has this idea of, you know, we're Alabama, we're Oklahoma, we're Texas, we're always going to be at the top, history will show you otherwise if you take even a brief glance at it.
Interesting conversation you and Matt were having. How did you phrase that question?
I how tied to their coaches are the fortunes of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State?
Reputations or
the trajectory, and it's a tough question to ask because, like Matt said, you would have to know who they brought in. But if they brought in somebody where there was going to be a 10% dip on both sides.
So you're talking about whoever, not just Mike and Riley, but whoever.
Well, no. These two specifically. And I knew that OU had more to lose from their stature in college football, but I also wondered how much OSU would lose if they also dipped down into a level of mediocrity, which is if they took a step back. If OU took a step back, it'd be 8-9 wins, which would get everybody furious, of course. It was just I.
That's an interesting question. Yeah. I didn't catch exactly how you had phrased it. I think this, you know, again, two points here, and we end up talking about them kind of every day. OU is the only school in the country with four coaches with over 100 career wins. Okay, so what does that tell you? If you come there and you got a lick of sense, you're going to win a whole bunch of football games.
Yeah,
the from the standpoint of, I do think this, and I remember here about, I don't know, it's probably been about a month ago now, when we were down to the Oklahoma Sports Hall of Fame, I had cut a presentation video for Mike. Mike had asked me to be the presenter, and they do it by video now. And I had brought out the point, which I firmly believe, that Mike is the most important single figure ever in the history of Oklahoma State football, period. And I'm including coaches, I'm including players, I'm including hanger-oners, I'm including whoever, you know, and I can, hanger-oners means a lot of things for me. I don't totally want to explain that all the time, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
Now that doesn't mean Mike's the only one that could do that job either. And I think Matt and I've talked about this off there. I don't think it has to be somebody with a necessarily Oklahoma State background. That kind of gets to be a popular deal because, you know, Smith and the guys around there and all this kind of stuff, then you get into that non-revenue sport issue, but what have you. But I do think this, I think you could, I told Matt off the air, you know, you from, if you got the wrong AD in there at the wrong time and viewed things a little bit differently, you could blow that job up real quick if you overschedule.
Okay.
You could overschedule yourself right out of a job.
Mm.
Now, I do think this, I think going forward here, how much longer that Mike does it, I don't know. Obviously, his business. My gut feeling, he'll do it as long as Gunner's still playing there. But and you got the other younger son. But from the standpoint of, you know, going forward on this thing, if with the way this league is now, you know, and with what they've done with the expansion, once Texas No U leaves it, the league is not as good, but it's easier to win.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In that regard.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
I mean, you can't, and we've talked about this, and you know, once A&M, Colorado, Missouri, and Nebraska left, this league took a dip, a huge dip. Now, Texas and OU leave, and it takes even a bigger dip. I mean, it's to me, going forward, I mean, it's still going to be interesting. It always is because it's football at the major college level. But this league now gets closer to the Mountain West probably than it does the SEC.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just – but on the same hand, if you can win a lot of games in Stillwater if you schedule intelligently, because you're Mike and them have done the best job of because you're close to Texas. Mike's recruiting priorities have always been, you know, I mean, he takes some hits because, you know, he doesn't play the, you know, star game, 4-star, 5-star, all that. They go after kids they think can play and understand what they're going against competitively, you know. And that, not that they don't get in the deal, but they'll get out of a deal pretty quick if they think they're in over their head.
Yeah.
And that's just being smart. So I think that, you know, I do think Matt was exactly right in that I think it's important in both places that from a fit standpoint, you know, you get somebody that understands the area, the region, understands kind of the dynamics of the way things work. And Matt was right, you know, and I lived there for 16 years. And I mean, Stillwater's it's a burg. I mean, you know what I mean? It's an outpost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually a youngster that goes there will have a good experience, particularly now because of all the nice buildings they built on campus. And that campus looks nice. I mean, they've done
absolutely
some really nice stuff there. Now, again, it's Stillwater itself is an outpost. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's bad either. But as far as you could schedule yourself out of a job if you're not careful in Stillwater, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I do think Mike is, you know, because of all the factors, I don't think it's even close, personally. That I would hope at some time in the near future, seriously, that they would put Mike's name on that field. You know, now again, it's been 30 years and they put a Sanders statue up there. So
yeah.
Maybe, you know,
maybe don't hold your breath on that one.
Well, you know, all that. But I would hope at some point that because, you know, from a player to an assistant coach to the head coach, I mean, I don't even think it's close as far as Mike is the single most important figure in the history of Oklahoma State football. And that includes, like I say, Heisman Trophy winners or Hall of Fame coaches or what have you. You know, I mean, it's not even close. But, you know, and now you can't say that about, you know, maybe how long would it take to be able to put Riley in the same club that Switzer and Coach Wilkinson and, you know, and Stoops and Benny Owens are in.
Well, 100 wins and a title. I mean,
yeah, 100 wins and 100 wins and at least one national title.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. In order for him to be in that,
I mean, so the bar is obviously so high down there because, like Matt said, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is.
That's Coach Wilkinson and Coach Owen and
Coach Switzer
Stoops
and Coach Stoops. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're the ones that
blame
do that.
Blame all them. You know, again, Howard Snellenberger was a hell of a good football coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now they'd been way better off. Mac Brown would have taken the job, but Donnie Duncan hires Howard. Howard's a hell of a good football coach, but again, it wasn't a fit. Okay, Howard's ego got in the way too much, and he tried to butt heads, tried to win the battle with President Bourne, and you're not going to win that with football coaches, not. And again, Howard, you know, you don't come into an iconic program like OU and start changing uniforms, and, you know, you don't make the man whose name's on the building, you don't make him unwelcome, all those sorts of things. Howard's ego got him. Howard Steinberg can coach football. There's no question about that, as his record has shown it at other places. But it wasn't a fit. It wasn't a fit for OU.
Matt, what's this college football playoff story? Is there any danger of postponing a potential expansion, or is there just a little bit more trepidation right now?
I ran off a copy. I heard Matt. Excuse me.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I ran off a copy of the thing yesterday that Dennis Dodd had made on the same thing. I saw Heather Dinge's piece, but. Yeah, there's a danger that this. I mean, I say danger. There's a chance that this thing could go completely another way.
Mm.
I would probably come closer, Matt, at this point in time. What do you think on a 12-team playoff? 50-50?
What did Dennis say? Because I haven't read Dennis's article.
Same thing you did. You know,
I think it's going to expand.
By the way, what did you say, Matt, earlier for people that are just joining us?
Well, I mean, Pat, for me, and we talked about the way these cycles have worked in this agreement.
Right.
I think that it will either happen beginning with the 23 season. If it doesn't happen then, I think it'll take until 26 because of this 12-year agreement that they're in. The college football playoff began in 2014. 12-year agreement, and essentially it's four three-year cycles where in the first year the Rose and Sugar have the semis, the second year the Orange and Cotton have the semis, and the third year the Peach and the Fiesta have the semifinals. This year coming up in 21, so last year the Rose and the Sugar had the semis. This year the Orange and the Cotton do. Next year in 2022 the Peach and the Fiesta will be. So that will be the end of that cycle. My best guess is in order to make everything equitable, if they can do it by 23, they'll do it then. If they can't, I think they may, Pat, I think they might wait until after 25. And another reason to wait until after 2025 is the television aspect. Because I know in Dinich's piece, I read a quote where, you know, talking about how it would be ideal if you could get another network involved, basically to drive the price up. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to have a 12-team playoff, that's 11 games, much like in the NFL playoffs where all the games are not on one network. You've got, heck, they're on like four different networks now between CBS, Fox, NBC, ABC, all that sort of thing. So if they redo their agreement before this agreement expires, then ESPN themselves would have the right to buy the entire property. If they wait until this agreement expires after the 2025 season, then you can get Fox and NBC involved, which in theory you'd have some bidding against each other and it just drives the price up. So, Pat, I don't know that it's going to happen as quickly as I expected. I would say 95% confidence it will expand at some point. It's not going to be four forever.
Here's Gideon. Just a couple of sentences from Dennis Dodd's piece. Okay, he's saying this, and Dennis is as well connected as anybody. Maybe it's just a feeling. Maybe a 12-team playoff is inevitable. It's certainly another screaming example that college football needs a commissioner, someone to get in the room and actively create consensus instead of the sport hoping these raging wildfires of self-interest put themselves out. And I told Matt, again, I said in those national meetings for over a decade, and this is typical college football, that you get in there and even things that make sense for a lot of the people in that room, that there are so many individual agendas to help quote my school that it's hard to get anything done. Chuck Nines had it going years ago with the College Football Association. And it was kind of going, as far as what we're talking about here with certain things. But then all of a sudden, the Pac-10 and the Big Ten wouldn't join. Well, then now, and even then, I can remember sitting in those meetings. And things that seemed very logical, but all of a sudden, once somebody would stand up and you could tell what he's talking about the basic, it pointed toward what's best for his school. And you're always going to have some of that. But, I, you know, as far as I'm never very optimistic about college football really getting any kind of consensus on anything. So, personally, I would say a 12-team playoff is at best 50-50. Now, something's going to be done. That'll expand from four. My guess it'll go to eight. I wouldn't load up on any of it because you don't know.
Eight, but maybe see how that works.
Within the next couple of years, guys? Or, Matt, are you talking about 26?
Who knows with that stuff? When you, and particularly coming out of this COVID stuff, which we're not out of yet, but as far as the financial hits that everybody has taken in higher ed, you know, how much does that factor in on, Matt, on people buying out of some of these rights deals to speed it up?
You know, the thought of a czar, we've talked about this, college football commissioner, whatever, you know, executive director of college, whatever phrase you want to use. Pat, do you ever think that'll happen?
Probably not. I don't know. I think it's badly needed. This kind of issue could drive it into that. But again, like I say, Chuck Nynaeus was former commissioner of the Big Eight and very well respected nationally, and smart guy. And Chuck goes and get in. He forms the College Football Association. It was well structured. It was well run. It was the whole thing. Although at the end of the day, the Pac-10 and the Big Ten wouldn't join. Simply because their presidents did not, they thought it was something that was outside of the NCAA, is the way I remember it, you know. And so, yes, and it did have some, you know, some movement as far as getting some things passed legislatively and getting organized and all this. That's why we've always said, Matt's heard me say it a zillion times, college basketball has always, even with more people at the Division I level, has always been so much better organized for what we're talking about than college football. Now, college football is a bigger beast because you got 100,000 state stadiums and all that kind of stuff you're dealing with. But I don't know. It's this, whether there'll ever be a czar to this thing, I don't know. This stuff might drive it that direction some kind of way. Or it might just keep on, you know, kind of plodding around. And I mean, we're always going to have institutions with agendas. But can anybody come to any kind of halfway consensus on this something to get something? The only thing is, at some point in time, I mean, whoever comes up with a plan to get them the most money, is probably going to win.
They're going to win
at some point.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.